Oh, hey there, I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining, our digital strategist, Winter Mitchell.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Academic and DJ Oliver Wang.
Hi, Guy.
Hello, Oliver.
You're wearing pants.
I'm wearing pants. It's summertime, it's very hot, and I'm wearing pants like a real official adult man. And you guys, we had an entire month without Margaret, and we were like, oh, well, we'll just use the old reliable crutch of Pop Rocket. We'll just go to our fifth Beatle, Karen Tongson. But somebody was out of the country for most of that month.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so I have to say hello again to conjure the spirit of Shelley Long.
It was the weakest of her late 80s comedy.
It's so true.
Possibly even worse than Outrageous Fortune. Karen, where were you?
I was in the Philippines and Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
You know, a little homecoming, a little, I'd never been to Vietnam, so no. I just sort of, you know, so it was a new thing, a little celebratory fifth anniversary trip for me and my lady friend.
Oh, that's lovely.
And her birthday also. And just, you know, lots of beaches, carousing. The usual eating.
Am I correct in remembering that you went to what is supposed to be the best banh mi shop in the world, or was the best pho shop in the world?
The best banh mi, supposedly, in
okay.
the world.
And indeed, was it?
It was pretty damn special, although I also went to the famous Saigon lesbian banh mi place.
Oh, interesante. Do tell.
Which
yes,
is
tell
all
us
just
more.
Like very, you know, mysterious meats and lots of pate spread all over the bread. and, you know, some a gay man I know complained it was too rich, but in any case, that was actually the true revelation of our trip was the Huynh Hua, if anyone's curious, in Saigon.
Well, you heard it here, guys. Coming up on this week's
show. I'm not wearing pants.
Coming up on this week's show, we're going to be talking about vacation and travel and pop culture. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or event have caught our attention this week. All right, we're going to do this non-traditionally because between the four of us, we only have two different topics. So first, I will go to Winter and Oliver. What are you guys all about this week?
I want the DJ to start this off.
Well, I've only seen
respect.
I've only seen the pilot episode, but
okay.
Both Winter and I are talking about the new Baz Luhrmann Netflix series, The Get Down, which is set in the South Bronx in 1977. It's basically supposed to be like the birth of hip hop story. I just watched the first one last night. You've seen the whole thing?
No, I saw three episodes.
Okay, does it get better? Because that first episode was a hot freaking mess, I thought.
Last night, one of my coworkers, Charlie Grandy, texted everyone from our writer's room and said, I'm ordering you to watch this show. I can't tell whether it's amazing or terrible.
Yes. I'm going to give it up to him. It's one of those things where, like, I'm so high off of Stranger Things, which, by the way, is the most popular online show
ever. Yeah, I had to catch
ever,
up with that, too.
That I was just like, I want Netflix to just keep hitting it out of the park. Visually, it's beautiful. I mean, it is scrumptious. It's like right. so detailed. It's also the most expensive Netflix show ever made.
So, tell everybody what the show is.
It's I don't know what it is. It's
exactly
exactly. There you go.
I have one line. I think
yes.
it's Wild Style meets Show Me a Hero.
Yes,
birthed through Baz Luhrmann's lurid red curtain.
100%.
My essentialization, Karen, is gritty Fat Albert.
It's
Fat Albert, but with real issues going on. But yeah, those like
yeah.
the Jimmy Smits sort of like local politics.
Oh my god,
what happened to Jimmy?
Okay, let me tell you something. The one thing that I feel like Baz really took. He so took a lot of inspiration from was Spike Lee's Summer of Sam because there's a lot of like really sweaty. We know that summer. This is what I'm annoyed about, that everybody seems to romanticize 1977 of New York City because it was a really weird time period socially, politically, environmentally. I think it was super duper unusually hot. It was unnaturally hot. It was a ton of blackouts. The city was bankrupt. There were changing mayors. There was a lot of stuff going on.
The Bronx was burning.
The Bronx
Summer
was burning.
Of Sam.
Summer of Sam. So there's a lot of like emphasis on all of these things. And so I feel like walking into it, I felt like I was literally walking around in 1977 New York.
But it looked like downtown LA.
Right.
It's such a richly defined world. I mean, I do feel a little bit like, oh, we're hitting everything. And then you have tagging and parkour and disco gently turning into hip hop and
black people's obsession with karate.
Yes. Yeah. Like all of these things that are very, very 70s. And I'm like, is this too much? But the fact that it is a cast of people of color, it is kids playing kids, which is really nice because I'm, you know, I get tired of 24-year-olds playing 16-year-olds. Yes. It's fascinating. I don't understand it anyway about why Baz Luhrmann is involved in it.
And that's the thing. I think the period detail that we're talking about, yes, right. Are there specific moments where, okay, you understand sort of what the South Bronx might have looked like in that moment? Sure.
Yeah.
But the problem is that his production style or lack thereof is so overwhelming and herky-jerky and all over the place.
What do you mean lack thereof? Because it feels... no one's saying Baz Luhrmann is underproducing.
Well, there's no logic to it.
It's like that Pate on like, the lesbian Broadway.
At least with the pilot. And maybe, again, maybe there's more consistency in the future later episodes. But in the first 90 minutes of it, tonally, I couldn't figure out what this wanted to be. Is it trying to be like over the top, overproduced in the way that I think of Baz Luhrmann? Yeah. Is it trying to be quasi, you know, documentary, wild style-ish? And it was sort of all the above, but none of it really worked together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The two things that I will give shouts out to, the main character, he eventually finds his voice. So he
Ezekiel.
Goes Ezekiel. So Ezekiel goes from, that's why I'm saying it's so much shit going on, I don't even know people's names. He eventually goes from sort of being sing-songy and poetic to actually figuring out how to rap, right? By the influence by
Shaolin.
Ooh, fantastic.
Let's also talk about in sing-songy, there are moments when our characters start only speaking in couplets.
Yeah. That was the other thing that kind of threw me off, too, because I was like, have I missed something? Should they have been rhyming or speaking in sonnets the entire time? Also, the one thing I always love that people do really well, which Summer of Sam didn't do that well, is make New York real nasty. I mean, this is like a shitty ass New York, like what, like you've never seen before. I mean, that trash is going to get a Golden Globe nomination. There is trash every fucking where. There's so much damn trash in New York pre-1999.
It makes Taxi Driver look like Sex in the City.
Exactly.
Oliver, do you think people should watch this?
Thing is, I don't really know who the audience for it is, except for I know I'm part of that audience because I'm of the generation where I know enough of this history. I want to see it dramatized because it hasn't been done. And for that reason, I will continue on with it. But if I'm just sort of trying to look at it in an objective aesthetic way, it was kind of an unholy mess. Like it was just a weird, weird pilot.
Winner. Do you think people should watch this?
I do think people should watch it because it is telling a story that is rich to our culture.
Right.
And, you know, I do think that it's effective that way. I love Nas's participation in it. He's an executive producer and he's also the voice of Ezekiel as an adult, which is a
chorus.
Little
doesn't really,
weird.
It doesn't work.
Doesn't really work. But yeah, I think it's pretty. I think it tells a story. It's sort of doing it poetic. It feels very Spike Lee-ish, like Crooklyn meets Summer of Sam. But I like
but
it.
But on acid. That's
but on
thing.
Acid. Yeah. But on acid.
Oh, I love Crooklyn. Okay, one more question for you, Winner. When those girls are in those disco rap dresses,
yes.
Are you supposed to see their underwear sometimes?
Yeah, I think back then girls didn't really have, you know, back in the day, wearing a girdle before the world of Spanx, wearing a girdle was something only old ladies did.
Uh-huh.
So you kind of like to jiggle and shake it up. But I think, you know, and they were also very fast asses. Like they were talking about chochas and coochies out in public. I mean, my grandmother would have smacked my mouth. But yeah, I think girdles are a thing of the present with the introduction of Spanx. I think back then, young girls didn't wear girdles because that was an old lady thing.
I also, one of the other things I really like about it is that it does present the Bronx as an interesting combination of cultures. So so frequently when you are looking at Outer Borough, New York, you're focusing on sort of like
only black people,
one cultural experience. Yes, right. And this is a place where those things are all over
but
each other.
But that's the only thing that I felt comfortable with. I grew up like that. So I grew up with all kinds of people interplaying with each other and not having to constantly shout out, you're Asian, you're Filipino, you're gay. So that was the only thing that I felt really comfortable with, the mixing of cultures and dialogues and the Spanglish and all that. I like that.
And the music's good.
Yeah, the music's good.
Better be good.
Karen,
yeah, so good.
What are we all about this
week? What are we all about? Well, obviously we're all about the sort of delicious homosexuality of the Olympics.
Oh, yes.
Also, you know, because being super jet lagged, I just got back like about a week ago. It's one of the perfect things to kind of just watch in the, like to have like as part of your atmospheric ambient
yeah.
like, life world. But because of the early exit of the U.S. women's soccer team, which I know has devastated the micro communities of creative lesbians all over Los Angeles, because we were all watching these games together at sundry pubs, I've had to turn to other sports. And
like
really
volleyball.
Kind of just like well yeah exactly volleyball is one of the things that shocked me that I like really felt was sort of like a kind of residual of my attachment to Greg Louganis from the 80s was watching women's springboard diving and the drama of that particular competition, which the Chinese have dominated now forever. And there was indeed a proposal to the silver medalist, He Ji. But I was mostly watching it because there was Tanya Cagnato, who is the third place Italian diver, in any case.
Can we talk about the two queernesses of men synchronized diving?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, you had out British diver Tom Daley, who is now engaged to Academy Award-winning screenwriter Dustin Lance Black, who was in no way mentioned. Because normally, so frequently, they're constantly telling you, oh, this is this person's wife and they just had a child and all of those things. But because Tom Daley was engaged to a man, there was just no mention of it. And people were like, NBC was sort of like, well, he's British. We don't talk about foreigners that much, which is bullshit. And also, like, he's engaged to kind of a famous person.
Sure.
And so there was a bit of a dialogue about that. But then on the other side of things, there was just the raw homoerotic tension between Steele Johnston and David Bodaya, both of whom have identities that are rooted in Christ, who spent a lot of time telling you that they had identities rooted in Christ, but really were telegraphing a better relationship than I've ever had.
They're synchronized, of course.
Yes, and it was sort of like there is just something so deeply gay about having these two people be that in sync.
Yeah, that in sync and that into Christ, frankly. but also the funny thing that is, though, that amidst all of this kind of the repression of these actual narratives of like gay couples, the Olympics and NBC has done its best to really kind of emphasize, for example, the budding new romantic friendship between Kerry Walsh Jennings and April Ross. I know so many queer women who are just so invested in how NBC has really played up like their courtship, like she leaned across the net after she defeated her in London in 2012 and said, let's win gold together in Rio, you know? And just last night I was watching their match against Australia, and there was all this talk about their matching, you know, friendship necklaces with locks and keys. And then they had to say, well, you know, they're both married. April's married, by the way, also. We know Kerry Walsh Jennings is because she has three names. But there's this real kind of, which really underscores to me how much the Olympics always really have been about the kind of homoeroticism and the kind of innuendo and the kind of delicious innuendo that, like, that guy you commented on before, you know.
Do you think it part of it, this is obvious, but I think a lot of it has to do, they're in a really sultry place to begin with, more sultry than the places they've been to in the past. And then also just writhing bodies in the heat. I just feel like it's almost giving me
beach.
A lady boner. It's just like, I can't even watch it because sometimes I'm just like, ooh.
And also these people who are like we're all like verbal talky people. These people who are best at communicating with their bodies.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. For me, like what Rio has given us was we will eventually get to the two Simones. But first, let us talk about the look on Gabby Douglas's face when she sticks a landing after parallel bars, where like it is this woman who's been through so much in the past 4 years and so much in the past
4 days.
Week.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And these people tearing at her, and the fact that like when she sticks a landing, you just know that at that moment, Gabby Douglas is fine. And like having, it was tragic that she did not make the individual all around, but like her sitting in the stands just watching, kind of not giving a shit, was delightful to me.
And yet she got so much shit for not giving a shit.
Yeah,
I mean, and that's because she's a black woman, frankly.
Yeah,
and I think that that's, you know,
She wants to do better. She wants to kill it.
Yeah, exactly. And but also just, you know, she's been through a whole hell of a lot, right?
And it has been interesting looking at the ways that, like, today somebody posted a headline in a newspaper that Michael Phelps won silver, and then underneath that was
Ledecky setting the world record.
Yeah, and just sort of that women's accomplishments, even when they are at the level of a Katie Ledecky or a Simone Biles, are still taking, like, backseat to the mediocrities of men. Or, you know, the fact that the woman who was the first Black woman of any nation to win an individual swimming gold medal, we didn't go and look at her medal ceremony because that doesn't matter. We watched a preliminary heat that had Michael Phelps in it.
Yeah.
And it was a fascinating and really exciting, like, wonderful moment that this girl, like, set an Olympic record, climbs out of a pool, has a microphone shoved in her face, and is answering the questions that everybody has to answer, and then has to pivot to responsible civil rights hood.
Yeah.
And sort of, like, talk about what this means for all people and figure out the right way of talking about, oh, the 60 or 70 years when Black people weren't allowed to use public pools in most of this country. You know, it was, and she fucking handled it like a pro. Like, it's very impressive.
But this is where Leslie Jones's enthusiasm as a correspondent for NBC has also been really crucial, and is kind of like a meta narrative that matches a lot of these things that have been happening with some of the Black female athletes at the Olympics, where, you know, that now, you know, after all of the flack that she took about Ghostbusters, you know, that she's, like, regaining some steam from doing, like, from her unbridled enthusiasm, and that her statement about, like, oh, the Olympics is something where we can forget about all the crap that's happening at home, but, you know, it's still always there. It's still, like, percolating beneath the surface.
I like that we got a week of her recording from home and just yelling shit about what was going on, and then we got her properly in Rio, but I honestly think I liked her better
at home. Me too.
When she was just sort of, like, doing what we all do, but like bigger and funnier, like, it really felt so relatable and is the best of what social media can and should be. Oliver, what has been your favorite Olympic moment so far?
I needed more time to think about this. Yeah, come back to me. I
Oliver's
need to
answer is Ryan Lochte's hair. You are listening
definitely
to
not.
Pop Rocket. We will be right back to talk about vacation and travel and pop culture after this.
Going into a Bullseye interview, I know it's somebody who does amazing work, but it's an actual conversation. I don't know where it's headed.
Hey, this is the straight talk that you're going to get on this show.
Does that make sense? I feel like I'm in therapy.
I think you got more out of you than the therapist I went to twice.
Bullseye. Creators you know, creators you need to know. Find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are
Winter Mitchell,
Karen Tongson,
Oliver Wang.
And we did not talk about Simone Biles, but next week we will talk about the Olympics as a pop culture phenomenon, and we'll get into some Simone. But this week we're talking about travel and vacations in pop culture. It's that time of year when so many of us are traveling around to places. And it's always fascinating and fun when that happens in popular culture. But the first question has to be, before you travel, what entertainment, what culture are you bringing with yourself, Winter?
I probably bring too much. I bring my computer, my iPad, and then I also maybe get an actual magazine. It depends on who's the cover. And I must be dying to read the story. I don't bring books anymore because I used to overdo it on books. And you just can't bring books anywhere at this point.
I did bring, on my most recent trip, this was to Hawaii a couple weeks ago, I did bring Margaret's book with the best of intentions, did not look at a page of it. I mean, it's not like I replaced it with something else book-wise. It's just when you're on vacation, like, I don't actually want to read a book right now. No shots.
Karen?
Well, when I used to travel, I did used to bring a bunch of stuff with me, and I would often have like a giant valise filled with things. But now, you know, like, as we all kind of talked about before, like, you got your smartphone, you got your laptop, and that's all you need.
Yeah.
And for me, the most essential thing is music.
Yeah.
It's on a road trip,
absolutely,
on an airplane, on a train, on every mode of conveyance possible. Like, the music is the thing that will keep you rooted, and the other stuff, it's sort of like I don't care about as much. Although I did download all of the DNC and watch it on a 17-hour train ride.
Oh, that's
fun.
That's
fun. Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
No. I like this.
Well, because I could fall in and out of sleep. I did the pure PBS unedited feed.
Jesus.
So I had like 32 hours.
You missed a whole lot of stuff on CNN.
Well, you also get the stuff, like, I don't want all of that analysis. I want to see the random state senators who are getting their 3 minutes to talk. That's the best. I used to, look, I'm somebody who always brings three books, but I spent a long time never reading them. And then finally with stand-up, when it was, like, when I was doing a bunch of colleges and was having to leave, like, was flying every weekend, I did get into a place where I really could just in a focused way, like, take down a book during those 2 hours of waiting for a plane. Or, like, if I manage to not be able to sleep on a plane, because I'm deeply committed to sleeping on planes, but if not, like, you can get some book read.
Real quick, one of the things I figured out to how to survive either, like, the long train ride or long plane ride is a decent video game. Because that really, your sense of time really goes out the window.
True.
And that really helped on this most
recent
trip.
Eats up a ton of power, though. Yeah.
So, a video game played on what console?
Oh, off my laptop.
Off of your laptop?
Yeah.
So, like, what?
So, on this trip, what did I do? It was an old standby, which is Borderlands 2, because it's very easy to jump into in the past. Christian, our producer, likes that choice.
Uh-huh.
I brought Super Hot on a trip earlier, which, okay, Christian also likes as well. Uh-huh. And again, they're easy games to just kind of jump into and jump out of, but they kind of alter your sense of how time passes and makes the flight faster.
Are any of you, like, what is our beach reading? What do you beach read?
Hmm.
Oh, also, let me just first say, anytime I go on vacation, I take at least two books, one of them that I want to read and one of them that I don't want to read, and I essentially use the one that I don't want to read to make the one that I want to read feel like a break and wonderful. When it comes to beach reading, I deeply like a comedian's book of like memoirs, like short chapters, funny and engaging. Any of the women I have been employed by in past, your Mindy Kaling's, your Chelsea Handler's, all of that. And then also a like somewhere between respectable and soapy, I'm going with Corelli's Mandolin. I'm talking about just, you know, a nice sort of like broken hearts and distant lands and that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, no, I'm also a fan of the snappy comedian's book and also of a memoir or of an autobiography on the beach, because it's like, I teach books for a living. I have to read so many books all the time. I want to read a magazine on the beach, or I want like short, snappy, punchy stuff. Mm. Bossy Pants was a great beach read for me. Or actually Candace Bergen's beautiful Knock Wood, which is a great autobiography.
Really?
Yeah, it's
and
so
people
good.
Say that lesbians and gay men have nothing in common.
Right?
OMG, you just outed her!
No, Karen is my favorite gay man. And...
Oh, I thought you added Candy Bergen.
Oh, no.
I was like...
No. I just mean that, like the only people I know who aren't Karen who have read Candace Bergen's autobiography are gay guys with shows on MTV. Winter, what is your beach reading?
I'm gonna have to go with you guys. It's a comedian's book of stories. You know, David Sedaris is really good.
Oh yeah.
You know, always.
Honestly,
really good.
I don't want a magazine on a beach or by a pool, because it's probably going to get at least a little bit wet and it's not going to be able to...
And then it's ruined and then you don't even give a shit anymore.
Hold up to that. I kind of want a hardback book because I know I can get it a little bit wet and it'll be fine.
Yeah. It's just, it's basically that, or it's something that's how-to-ish or teaching me to, like, be a better person.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm getting something self-help. So I feel like I'm getting something accomplished while, like, literally not moving for 8 hours on a beach.
Yes. So do you have something specific that you can recommend?
Specific. I liked Amy Poehler's book.
Oh.
That was very key to my trip to Japan. Amy Poehler's book was really good because she's really, the way her storytelling is it's very matter of fact, and that's kind of how I am. So she's like, blah, 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 chapter two. So that was a really good one to read. I'm also super into Wild because I feel like Wild makes you feel like you're a part of the wanderlust. It makes you feel like you want to be a little bit more adventurous, even where, no, if you're like somewhere even boring, like Tirania down in Palos Verdes. But then anything, obviously, David Sedaris's, any of his books are like the perfect one. I try not to get anything that's too dark, which I could tend to go to, because if I'm traveling by myself, I'm already, as you guys know, very much of a wild card. So I don't want to tempt fate anymore by introducing that much
dark books and lots of Mai Tais.
Yeah, I don't need that.
I will be specific, and I will recommend Rachel Dratch's Girl Walks Into a Bar, because it's very, very funny and very, very appealing, but also has a little bit more sort of like darkness than like Bossy Pants or,
yes, please,
you know, Amy Poehler's book or Sarah Silverman's book, because there is this element of like, I'm Rachel Dratch. I have a career. It's not an amazing career. And like, it's not just sort of like a series of successes. And it's wonderful and very, very relatable.
But I think Amy Poehler's book is like that too. Because I think Amy Poehler's, this is going to sound super controversial, but like, I feel like she's peaked. So I feel like there's that, I don't know, there's that sort of how I made it, how I got there. I kind of like latched onto my friend who's a little bit more successful than I am. I'm a little bit jealous of her.
She's currently producing Difficult People and Broad City, two of the like buzziest and funniest shows going.
Those are like your favorite shows.
That's true.
I do love that.
All right, Oliver, what's your beach read?
I don't like reading at the beach.
Okay, why?
I think it's a combination of, I don't want to get sand in my reading material. I don't really like sitting on the sand under the sun. I'd rather be in the ocean if that's the option given to me.
Do you read by a pool at a hotel?
No. I'm what? In the pool.
You're in the pool?
Or if I'm going to be sitting someplace, I'm in the hotel room where there's air conditioning.
I was going to approach you, but like getting sun. Don't you want to get sun? Don't you want the experience of getting sun and drinking?
Do you like going on vacation or no?
I do. And I spent a lot of time on beaches, but I didn't spend reading.
You know, maybe you would like Gabrielle Hamilton's Blood, Bones, and Butter, which is also it's a professional chef, but it's like a really like interesting memoir about like food and also these wonderful adventures.
Karen,
relationships
we didn't even talk about the world of pop informational. We didn't even talk about like books that are like the history of salt.
See, yeah. That probably, if I did read at the beach, that's that probably what I mean.
Next to a pool is better than the beach usually.
Yeah, next to a pool is really... like
if you're reading the history of salt, I want to get to know you.
But it's like a gentle, I completely read this book that was about the history of salt. There was a period of time when like, if I wanted to read but not be taxed, I was completely reading A History of the World in Four Beverages or something.
Yeah. I read that book. I think it was seven, but yes. That was a great read. I love those books.
Exactly. And they're like one of the fun documentaries from Netflix. Right. All right. What is, in your opinion, the best movie about a vacation?
Well, I mean, I know a couple of us sort of debated. It's Dirty Dancing. And one of the things that I want to say is that I want to make a distinction between a vacation film and a travel film.
Uh-huh.
I believe that films about vacations are about people who are setting out on a purpose, you know, to relax or to heal something or to have fun.
Yeah.
Like on the National Lampoon series or whatever, or because that's what people do in their class bracket. Like My favorite vacation movie, Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, it's my favorite vacation film. Because it really is about, the Catskills, about, you know, being infected with the Mambo and all of this kind of stuff. Whereas a travel movie is about, like, having to travel maybe for work or for something else and then having some sort of transformative encounter, or impulsively, and having a transformative encounter by yourself. Whereas in a vacation movie, you usually have it with somebody else or with a milieu.
One of the great things about Dirty Dancing is that manages to give you, like, from a vacation movie, you kind of want you're in a better place, you're in a fun place, you're getting to do something a little bit more fun than regular reality. But it also, like, gives you those stakes. It also gives you that it's an important film about reproductive rights.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask real quick, by that criteria, so Room with a View, vacation film, or travel film?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think it's more of a travel film because that's sort of, it is about, well, it's
when are they traveling? It's a vacation movie.
I know, it's true. I mean, well, they are. They're taking their, you know, continental tour from.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So I suppose that's what people did in their time. So I guess that's not like the ideal travel film. Something like The English Patient would be more of a travel film.
Yes.
Insofar
as
everybody's going
subject,
out
right.
to like, you know, map the desert and shit like that.
Karen, I had not seen A Room with a View in forever, and then I watched it recently and had one of those moments of realizing, like, Jesus Christ. all, like, realizing how gay without being gay Forster's work is. I realize that that's the lamest thing to say, but you also need to understand I was consuming these things when I was between 11 and 17 years old.
Yes,
a little bit too stupid to realize that Lucy Honeychurch is just a butt-hungry young boy who cannot yet learn that she is,
I'm writing down butt-hungry.
the love that is forbidden or frowned upon by your social
your
peers.
Your duenna.
Yes. Oliver, vacation movie.
All right, so let's see. 80s classic would have been Dirty Dancing for all the reasons that have already been stated. I'd say the contemporary slept on, except it's not really slept on because everyone says this, is Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which I think is infinitely rewatchable and a really, really fun and smart, funny vacation film. To me, though, the answer that really came to mind, and maybe this is on that cusp between vacation and trip film, is the Linklater Delphi Hawk trilogy of Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight. Because they're kind of on vacation, but also, it's got elements
absolutely.
Of both.
I would say that it really is, because it really is all about in-between spaces.
Right. And, I mean, there's so many ways in which I could approach this, but I think what I like about it the most is that each film has a different beat to it in and of itself. I love the revisiting of the same characters after amount of time. And I think what I really appreciate about it, and this really only kicked in until you got to Before Midnight, which is the most recent one, is you see sort of the evolution of the relationship, which you didn't. I mean, you sort of got the flirting in the first one. You got more flirting with some more pathos in the second one. But the third one was really the film about them as a couple.
Yeah.
And that was so rich because there's a lot in it that I could identify as someone who basically had been with my partner for about the same amount of time as them in that point in their story, if that makes any sense. Without the twins, though.
I have not seen the second two because the first one made me feel so much. Like, at a
you're
going to
feel a
age,
whole lot on the last two.
I have been. I've taught, I've been in situations where I could watch it and I've been like, no. Okay, I will bring up three movies. The first one is a British movie from the 80s called Shirley Valentine, which is about sort of like British, like working class lady who I believe leaves her husband and then like goes off to Greece. And it's one of those classic like recontextualization movies that is like really lovely. A person sort of like saying, who am I in this other place? And I adore it. Second one is Muriel's Wedding, which only has sort of like a sequence at a vacation, but I think a fundamentally transformative sequence where this person, like, who's been pushed down by the world around her, sort of like transforms into a person who can push back during the course of this vacation to Bali that she stole money from her parents to go on. And it's so dirty and messy and wonderful that there are ways that sequence of the movie sort of like expands and fills itself out for me. And then the third one is a movie that almost no one will consider good. Karen and Oliver, you may have seen it. Have either of you seen Club Paradise?
I did, with Billy Crystal.
With Robin Williams?
Oh, no, with Robin Williams.
That is
that's
one
right.
of my favorite movies.
Okay.
I've totally seen Club Paradise.
Okay, Club Paradise is...
it's also Robin Williams at his sexiest and shirtless.
So it's Robin Williams is Chicago police officer who...
There's a snot. It's the scene with the snot.
Yes. So he's a Chicago fire guy who gets like an insurance settlement and then he moves down to like an island in the Caribbean and starts a hotel with a guy there who is a famous reggae artist in real life. Mm-hmm. And it's basically them trying to make this shitty vacation destination. And then it's like a whole crew of SCTV people showing
Joe Flaherty
showing up as guests. And it really is just this very sort of like 80s, imagine if you could just live in like on an island in paradise that like just feels so charming and appealing while still being, it's essentially just like a bunch of sketches and a bunch of sketch characters, but it's in such a charming world that it just like fills love you with that sense of vacation.
It's a cinematic love boat.
Very.
It really is. I put a bunch, but I think the one that sticks out to me the most is The Out-of-Towners. with Sandy Dennis and Jack Lemmon. And that one, if we're going by your criteria,
I think it's a travel movie.
It's definitely a travel movie. So we're talking, we're really focusing on vacation, right? It's definitely a travel movie. But I really like movies that are always like something ridiculous happens and then it sets off a pattern of events. That's why I was going to say the two Sandra Bullock movies, The Net and Forces of Nature. Because The Net is she goes on vacation to try to get some sun because she's a programmer and is always inside and has a weird thing with being out in public. And then, of course, she goes on this vacation in Mexico and ends up being embroiled in like all this espionage.
That's
when she's running
point
for her life.
And that we, in my head, a vacation movie is a comedy or a romantic comedy, but there is this like subgenre of vacation action films.
Yeah. There's also Red Eye with Rachel McAdams and Cillian Murphy, where she's trying to somehow, you know, open herself up to potentially meeting this guy who has interest in her. And it turns out he's a terrorist. So those things, I'm always having nightmares about that. I feel like that would happen
inside
to me.
The mind of Winter.
Yeah,
Mitchell,
I just feel like
vacation.
It would happen to me. It just what hasn't happened to me. And then there's Forces of Nature, which is Sandra Bullock and Ben Affleck. And they're supposed to be going to Charleston for his wedding, and he meets her on the way, and then it sets off a chain of events, and they end up kind of hooking up, but not.
All of these clearly travel movies.
Yes.
But it segues us nicely.
Right.
And there is that very Planes, Trains, and Automobiles sort of like subgenre of like the travel that like keeps getting vexed over and over again.
Yes.
My favorite travel movie is Flirting with Disaster from David O. Russell back when he was good.
Mm-hmm.
And it is Ben Stiller trying to go find his adoptive parents. And it's like, is a really, really charming 90s screwball comedy that really uses the travel to never let you feel safe, to always have you be directed towards something new. And it's like really, really great. And also the wonderful beauty of an adoption comedy that you can have both Mary Tyler Moore as high-strung Jewess and Lily Tomlin as like low-key hippie at both being his mom. It is the best. It is Tia Leone at her sexiest and finest.
Oh, yeah.
But don't you think that it's also kind of like there's something about Mary kind of borrowed from that too?
Oh God, yes.
Yeah, like that sequence where he's where he gets arrested and it's almost and they think he's the highway killer is one of the best scenes in like in comedic history. It's hilarious. Yeah. And that totally reminds me of like something that was like on the cutting room floor.
Oliver, these travel movies, do they stress you out or do you just love them?
Well, it's funny. I was just thinking about this, that the difference between a vacation film and a travel film is that in a vacation, the main conflict or drama is usually around how is this person or group of people going to enjoy themselves in a foreign environment. And foreign can mean, I mean, not literally, but that's really where the central conflict is. In a travel film, ultimately, the narrative is, do they get to where they are going to go?
Yeah.
And that, which is very simple. Like, it kind of creates a very, a literal beginning and an end. I'm sorry, what was your question?
I find them stressful. I find travel movies inherently, most of them inherently stressful.
I think it's partly because you're wondering, are they going to get to wherever it is that they're trying to get to? And I don't know if I find them inherently stressful. I mean, the film that came to my mind as a favorite travel film would be like something like The Blues Brothers, which is all about like getting from point A to point B. But I also like sort of the subgenre of horror films that are all about tourists getting basically eaten by zombie cannibals or whatnot, because it sort of takes all of the xenophobia that you could do, but somehow manages to subvert it by making the tourists naive or stupid or racist themselves.
Which is why Cabin in the Woods was so good, because they were all subverting all of that.
Right.
Okay, I will ask you this about vacation. The subgenre of vacation comedy where you are going to a foreign place and that place changes you. Like, are those fundamentally colonial? Like, every time someone goes to, a warmer, browner place and they learn to get in touch with their body, is it all just eat, pray, love?
I mean, I'm trying to think of an example where it doesn't do that.
Dumb and Dumber.
Well, I would say... I was going to be like, well, The Lover... Or I do think they are fundamentally colonial, or they complicate the colonial encounter, or Passage to India, for frack's sake, you know, where it's, you know, you see people in search of a transformative encounter in this place that maybe feels strange or impervious even. And that encounter with otherness not only just sort of uplifts or transforms them in a positive way, but really kind of unsettles who they actually are. And I think that that was always the fear of the encounter with otherness, right, like, in, you know, kind of colonial narratives. But I think in certain travel films, well, obviously, like a post-colonial film like The English Patient, again, am I K in your book? I think I must be. It is really fundamentally kind of testing, like, well, who is the other? Who is the person who will be treated by the hospital? Who is the enemy? You know, and I think that that's what a good travel film does, is it kind of forces you into kind of thinking about these things within yourself.
Karen, have you seen Lena Wertmüller's Swept Away?
I have not.
Oh. Karen, you have to watch
this.
It's
the gayest thing. Okay.
I mean, it's basically rich Italian lady on yacht. Like storm, she and is shipwrecked with only a rugged sailor, and then it is 45 minutes. You've seen it, right?
I've seen the Madonna version.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
It's close enough.
45 minutes of him training her to be the kind of woman that she should be, and also every woman I know, the deepest, deepest feminist on the planet, are all like, it's the hottest movie I've ever seen. and it really is this, like, story of, like, no, it manages to be in between the, in the wilderness, losing, like, the constraints of culture movie, but because it is the Mediterranean and so beautiful, is also kind of vacation movie.
Yeah.
So I'm assigning you that movie.
Oh,
and you
I
need to see
so
it, too.
Right,
you
there.
Will
so,
fucking
the
love it.
The non-Madonna version.
I know that the Madonna version is so overly lit and underlit and over everything lit. Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah.
So
there's no Lord of the Flies turn at the end where she kills and eats him?
Oh, no. It's like they... No, I mean, it's like a sad Marxist movie from the 70s. They go back to the yacht and she just like hooks back
and
up with her fat rich husband.
Yeah, forgets he exists. Yep,
yes.
That
spoiler alert.
All right. Oliver,
yeah.
What does Jimmy Buffett mean to you?
Boy.
Well, I actually have an answer for this one. The last time I was in Waikiki, which will be the last time I will ever stay in Waikiki, we were staying in a hotel which I think we're on maybe the 20th floor, but it was basically right above the outdoor pool where there was a Jimmy Buffett tribute band playing until very late in the evening. And this was when Ella was only about maybe 8 or 9 months. So it was so loud, it was keeping her up. And I'm pretty sure they were not just playing Margaritaville over and over again, but that is what my memory of that is. So yeah, that's my Buffett encounter.
Winter.
The most uninspired cheeseburger I've ever had was at that place that he has a franchise in Maui. So I think of nothing of him.
No, I want to ask you a different question.
Oh, okay.
Which TV family went on the best vacations?
Ooh. Ah.
I'll offer you Saved by the Bell kids. I will offer you Brady Bunch. I will offer you...
Scoop. Yeah. I was going to say Scooby-Doo, guys, but... Right. No, I was going to say, I would say the Saved by the Bell kids, because they went out and they had, like, hijinks galore. And they went to Palm Springs, and they went to Hawaii. But then I also feel like the Facts of Life going to Paris was a big deal.
They also went to Australia during that year. Like, 1988, we just all fell in love with Australia.
Yes, because of Crocodile
Koala
Dundee.
Blue.
Yeah.
Well, it was because of Crocodile Dundee.
Facts of Life in London, bad example.
Oh, really?
It was terrible. It was just bad.
Oh.
But they went to so many places.
They went to so many places. They had to be taken out of Peekskill.
Do you want your TV families to be going on vacation, or is that not a sitcom's job?
You know, okay, so like, full disclosure, one of my clients is Anthony Anderson, and I found out at TCA they're all going to, the Blackish family is all going to, not just Walt Disney World, they're going to Epcot Center, Walt Disney World, and some other place.
Oh,
that sounds absolutely nightmarish.
Winter, you could knock me over with a feather. a sitcom family from ABC is going to Disneyland.
I literally was like,
how on earth could this have happened?
No, my favorite part is that Anthony is mad that that another sitcom show, I think Fresh Off the Boat is going to Shanghai.
Oh.
So I think, Dr. Ken is going to Shanghai. So he was really mad. He's like, why are we going to Orlando? And they're going
Fresh Off the Boat's going to Taipei.
They're going to Taipei.
Which is kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
That is cool.
That is really cool.
I think it's lazy, though. I mean, just from a sitcom writing point of view, taking the family.
It's extremely expensive.
Well, that's
well. The thing is, I'm so tired of those Modern Family people. They go on a fucking.
They're
vacation.
Always on vacation.
They're always on vacation, and it is always just sort of like unrelatable. Like,
well, that
ABC,
means the show is almost dead.
ABC had corporate synergy, and so was able to send them to like this magnificent ranch or Hawaii or Disney World, mm-hmm. and it just feels
Australia too, right?
Yeah, I think yeah, and it just feels like unrelatable and like not good writing.
Yeah.
But I've never seen a predominantly black family go on a TV show.
Oh yes,
go
absolutely.
Someplace. So I'm actually excited about the Blackish storyline because when we went to Disney World, it was very Griswoldian.
Yeah.
You know, so like I'm looking for that experience and also the looks we got being a traditional family but of color and people just wondering what the fuck we were doing there and I'm interested to see what happens there, but I don't like that corporate synergy bullshit.
All right,
it's a coincidence.
does anyone have a song that to you really captures what it's like to be on vacation?
Is the Go-Go's too cheap of an answer? That is the Go-Go's, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not Enya's Orinoco Flow.
Oh my god.
That's totally not
sail
Enya.
Away, sail away, sail away.
This is
definitely not. Maybe something by Baja or something.
I don't know what Baja is.
Whatever the song was that Kathy Lee sang on the
If you could
see me now out on a something cruise.
The song is not actually about a vacation, but I always thought that Lola by the Kinks is like such a fascinating notion of somebody like being outside of their comfort zone and the world of constraints that they're used to living in. And then, you know, it's such a fascinating story. He had just left his family's home. He's never kissed a girl before. And then he encounters this beautiful woman who's into him and realizes that she's trans and like it really is just sort of having to ask himself like, who am I in this world outside of what I'm used to? And even as like a kid, I was just sort of like charmed by that narrative.
I have a question to you guys. Do you guys make playlists per trip, or do you have one big playlist that you grab from? I'm a playlist per trip kind of girl.
Well, I also think it's one of my obligations before going somewhere cool or interesting to like collect songs about that place so that I can like San Francisco playlist, New York, Montreal. You know, like when I go somewhere, I want to be thinking about the way other people have thought about it.
Right.
I don't prep in the way that you're talking about, but to answer Guy's question, there are songs that for whatever reason, when I think back to a trip, the song is associated with it. And it's funny that you mentioned Lola because as I was in Boy Scouts as a kid, and we went out to Death Valley once, and someone had brought along a Weird Al Yankovic album, I forget which one,
and they had
the cover, his cover of Lola, which was Yoda. And I always associate that song with driving on dirt roads in the middle of the fucking desert.
The whole Duran Duran Rio album actually is just my like vacation jam anywhere and everywhere.
Really
because when I was a kid, it would take me away from where I was. And so like it becomes the place that like, you know, corresponds with that fabulous place.
Is Hungry Like the Wolf the video that has you going through like
a jungle? Somewhere.
And then like you're in some hot bar that kind of thing.
There's a playlist that I was trying to find for the purposes of today. It was all of Kanye's. I used it when I went to Paris, and it reminds me of that trip so much. Is all of Kanye's songs mixed with his inspirations. So the songs that he sampled and the inspiration. It's like 2 hours.
That's
I'll
a good
find
playlist.
It. But I always remember that trip because of that.
Another song that is also just serving you up mostly exoticized Asia, but to me as a child, like, was One Night in Bangkok, which really...
I totally felt that, even though I didn't go to Thailand on this trip, but it was certainly the steaminess of Southeast Asian nights.
Like, this place is different from what you're used to.
That song is so strange.
Now, such a good song.
That video is now a visual earworm.
Yeah, now it's in my...
Thank you for that.
All right. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back with our current jams after this. All
I'm Hal Lublin.
I'm Danielle Radford.
I am Michael Eagle.
And we are the hosts of Tights and Fights, Maximum Fun's newest podcast dedicated to all things wrestling.
We'll be talking about Sasha Banks, the Women's Revolution, Sasha Banks, the brand split, and Sasha Banks' wigs.
And we'll also be talking about wrestler fashion. Some wrestlers wear too many clothes. Some wrestlers don't wear enough clothes at all.
And I'll be doing impressions of all your favorite wrestlers.
New episodes Thursdays on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts. Oh, yeah, dig it.
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell.
Karen Tongson.
And Oliver Wang.
Every week on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel, what's your current jam? Oliver Wang, what is your current jam?
It is the new album by Frankie Reyes, which is the nom de plume of LA's Gabriel Reyes Whitaker. And the album is called Boleros, Valses y Más. Basically, ballads, waltzes, and more. And the conceit behind this is it came out of a session that he did at Dub Lab here in L.A., and the theme was Latin modernism. And so what, as Frankie Reyes, what he did was he covered a bunch of classic Mexican and other Latin ballads and waltzes, but just replayed them on a vintage Oberheimer synthesizer, and this is what it sounds like. This is Flor de Azalea, which is a classic from 1964. One of the things I love about this album is that every time I played it for someone, they come up with a different metaphor for what they think it sounds like. So, I mean, to me, I thought of it as sort of like quinceañera music, but on a quinceañera that falls on the Day of the Dead. And someone else compared it to sort of like something you might hear on a merry-go-round, like, you know, in hell or something like that. But that sort of ghostly effect. And he's not actually changing much with the arrangement. He's actually playing the song very loyal to the original. It's just the use of the Oberheim. And, you know, the kind of other lo-fi production techniques he uses it gives it this really ghostly, haunting quality. And I just love the entire album for that reason.
Karen, what's your jam?
Appropriate to our travel vacay theme is one of my most embarrassing but also favorite road jams. And it's by one of my favorite road bands, the Indigo Girls, who I just actually just saw live at the Fonda Theater a few nights ago.
Nice.
And, you know, and the thing is, they're amazing. They've still got it. They sound great as a kind of now graduated lesbian jam band. They always make this kind of stuff sound good. It's called Get Out the Map. Letting it go to the chorus right here. Okay, one of the reasons I like this song is that it actually reminds me of Moving Right Along from the Muppet Movie, but an adult version. And
yeah.
I think that just gives me real joy every time I have it on in the car. And it's the fantasy of this kind of rootless lesbianism when you don't have kids and you can get out the map and you can just hop in your car and go anywhere and see all your different friends spread around the world.
It's lovely. My jam is part of my ongoing quest to find something better to be my summer jam this summer.
Can we have an update on that?
Failing
me.
We need to do in 2 weeks. Let's just call it.
All right.
All right. Here is Cheap Thrills by CM.
This is a good song.
I love
this song.
What's
your problem?
You knew it was coming.
What's your problem?
I like it.
It's my going out at night song.
Oh, I don't know. It's something about the whole thing just feels really generic, and I don't know.
Sia has been doing amazing work for us this in like the past 2 years, and I really feel like this has been a summer of pop stars producing lackluster, kind of boring songs that aren't worthy of their skills. Very slow songs. But and this isn't the best of what she's given us in the past 2 years, but I would say it's light years better than the shit that Britney and Katy Perry and so many of them have been throwing at me this summer.
Wow.
Winter, what's your jam?
Not wrong. This is one song that is always on my travel playlist because it's a good takeoff song and it's a good landing song. Mm. It's by Gorillaz. It's called Dare. I forget what year it came out. It was in the mid-aughts. And it's just, it's no matter what country you're in, people love this song.
I'm going to be so ill-prepared when we become nostalgic for the mid-aughts. Like, I'm just not going to have the energy
for
it.
You. Are
like,
you going to be ill-prepared because you don't want to be? It'll all be Death Cab for Cutie for me. Because, by the way, Spotify had a Throwback Thursday playlist, which was a fucking offensive to me. It was like Chumbawamba. It was like, where have all the cowboys gone? And I was like, I don't want to hear this shit.
The thing is I'm saying like ugh right now because I'm like, oh, the Damon Albarn that I will have to slog
right.
through. But the answer is it'll give me Junior, Senior, and Shakira. The great truth is that the songs I like are the ones that we become nostalgic for.
Shitty
pop songs are the ones that live forever.
100%. I'm just kind of, we should actually probably do a throwback aughts show and get ahead of it now. Why not? Why don't we do it?
All right.
I'm just saying it now. The months leading up to 9/11 in 2001 were questionable as fuck anyway. go with that with whatever you
Winter's
will.
Winter's about to get into her theories. You have been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Winter Mitchell, Oliver Wang, and our special guest, Karen Thompson. Karen, where can our listeners find more about you and your work?
Just Google me.
You know.
Come to USC, actually, and we're going to have an event at USC if you're here in Los Angeles this November on trans media and entertainment from Tangerine to Transparent.
Taylor's
coming, and we've got a lot of the trans and queer talent behind Transparent coming through, and it's going to be really great. So look up USC Transparent, Karen Thompson, you'll find it.
Badass. We post show notes every week at MaximumFun.org, and you can also find links in the episode descriptions of the podcast. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to absolutely no one for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. You guys, I don't want to have to go back to a world where I threaten Margaret's life on a regular basis to get you guys to review us. She's not even here this week. What are my options? Don't push the four of us into a corner, or we will do something drastic.
Mm-hmm.
So go to iTunes and please give us a review, preferably a 5-star review, or just something with a lot of interesting comments.
Yeah.
If you've got an opinion you want to share about this week's topics, you can join the conversation on our Facebook group or tweet at us. We are at Pop Rocket. We are a production of MaximumFun.org, and our producers are the interrupty Christian Duenas and Colin Anderson.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.